Good morning, everyone. I'm Sheila Campbell.
And I'm Rachel Flagg.
And we are the co-chairs of the Federal Web Managers Council. And we do everything in sync. It's great. As many of you know, Rachel and I have been working together for several years now, and we oftentimes feel that we're sort of separated at birth. We definitely complete each other's sentences, which happened already several times today. So
yeah, she actually has a twin, and it's not me, but I think it should have been. Maybe in another life.
So we are thrilled to see all of you here this morning. Wasn't that a great session with Vivek and Macon? Thanks to you all for making that happen. Great. And we really love the engagement that we've seen here today, from all the great questions that you all asked during the live session to the questions that you submitted via the moderator tool beforehand, from the Twitter fall that we're seeing here. Many of you all are contributing to that. And I love the one where someone said, it's like a geek version of a Who concert. The place is packed. So
we expect you to get your cell phones out, you know, and...
That's right, your lighters and start. So this is great. This is exactly the kind of atmosphere that that we were hoping for, that we've had ever since we started these conferences. I guess it's been 7 years going now. So it's really become a fabulous tradition, and it's just fantastic to see so many of you folks here today. So before we introduce our next fabulous speakers, Bev and Katie, we just have a few quick announcements, and then we'll get started because we certainly want to make sure that we get to plenty of time with those folks. It's going to be a great session. But first off, we really wanted to thank a few people who've really made the event possible today. We're hoping that they're in the room or at least nearby. First off, I would like to thank Martha, Doris, and Teresa Nasif at GSA's Office of Citizen Services and Communications. We could not put on an event like this. They support everything that we do each and every day, and they've just been phenomenal. So thank you so much, Martha and Teresa. And we also want to thank our conference coordinator, Jay Rouse. Hopefully many of you have probably seen Jay running around. She has just done an amazing job with today. It's probably hard to believe, but Jay actually only joined our team back in February, and she has just jumped in with a million and one details and just done an amazing job. And what's even more amazing is she's actually planning her own wedding in several weeks. So, so she's got a lot going on. There's Jay in the back. Thank you, Jay. And we also want to thank Daryl Diamond, who has handled every piece of logistics. He's probably talked to 99.9% of you folks in the room today. He's just done an amazing job, as always. Big thank you to Daryl Diamond. I think Daryl's out the registration table. Woo, Daryl! And Alicia Piazza, who's in the back there as well. She just joined our team about a month ago and has also done a terrific job handling all the logistics and helping out. And also her big thing is she's been handling a lot of the new media talks that we've had, which have been hugely successful. We're going to have a lot more of those coming up. So big thank you to Alicia. And we also want to thank Don Hebron, who's out at the registration table, and Natalie Davidson. They are the folks who manage webcontent.gov, which you all know is really the focal point of everything that we do, and they do just a terrific job with that. So a big thank you to Don and Natalie, who've kept that website updated with all the information about the conference. Great. And, of course, a big special thank you to Rachel, who's been on detail to our team for the last couple of months, and she's just been a godsend. I don't know what we would do without Rachel, so thank you, Rachel, for everything that you do. I just wanted to mention real quickly, in case you haven't noticed, we have some fabulous members of the media with us this morning. We are very, very glad that they could be with us. Over the past year, they have just given us terrific airplay and exposure for the great work that we do each and every day. So a big thank you to the media for being here today. But I just want to certainly let folks know that they're going to be here for the session. But then this afternoon we're going to have breakout sessions, and that is going to be closed to the media because I think it's also good for folks to be able to have those kinds of more intimate discussions as well. And then tomorrow morning during the unconference, that also will be closed to the media. But then again tomorrow afternoon we'll open it back up to the media for the plenary sessions. So, Rachel, I'll pitch it to you for a couple other updates, and then we'll get rolling.
Okay, just real quickly, since we have y'all captive here in the room now, we wanted to take a second to thank our wonderful members of our Federal Web Managers Council. And so most of you are here. Not everyone could be here today because of, you know, swine flu and other things. But I'm going to run through the list of council members, and as I call your name, please stand up and... and then once we get to the end, you can all give them a big round of applause. So here we go. Andy Bailey, Department of Labor, Bev Godwin, who is our sponsor, Brian Dunbar from NASA, Cammie Croft from the White House, Colleen Hope from State, Dick Stapleton from HHS, Gwen Costin from DHS, Janice Nall from CDC, Jesse Lee from the White House, Kelly Feeney from Transportation, Kirk Winters, Education, Larry Montgomery, Social Security, Leilani Martinez, GSA, Les Benito, Defense, Melissa Allen, Interior, Michelle Springer, Library of Congress, let's see, that's my own name, I don't need to read that, Ron Jones, Commerce, Sam Gallagher from HUD, Suzanne Narrett from Energy, Tina Kelly from Justice, Tom Parisi from IRS, and Vic Powell from USDA. Those are the agency reps, and none of you are standing up. Stand up. Come on. And then we also have our task group leaders, and our task group leaders have been just awesome in helping us work on different projects related to their field of expertise. So I'm going to run through the task group leaders now. Beth Martin from HHS Usability, Claudine Archambault from the Senate Usability, Eric Ramuth from HUD Training, Jeffrey Leiby, EPA and Social Media, Joyce Bounds, VA and Social Media, Nicole Burton, Usability, Rand Ruggieri from Commerce, Governance, Razor Rahman from the Historic Council, no, ACHP, whatever, some Historic American Council of Historic Preservation, right? Is Razor here? Russell O'Neill, who's from GSA, is also, Russell and Razor are on our Technology and Innovation group, and Tim Evans from Social Security is at Metrics. And I think I missed Natalie, who is our webcontent.gov web manager. So I ran through the list fast. I hope I didn't miss anybody. But we just wanted to have a chance to thank all of you because you have worked, especially this past year, so hard to help us with the white paper and the conference and just everything that we do all year. So thank you very much. And I will hand it back to Sheila.
Great. Thank you, Rachel. Okay, so now we're ready for the main event. We're going to introduce Bev and Katie, and I know they're very, very excited to be here today. We are really thrilled that Bev and Katie could be here with us. As you can imagine, they work until midnight just about every night and have a very busy schedule. So thank you for joining us. I'm going to start off with Katie. Katie Stanton joins the new media team as the Director of Citizen Participation. She has given up the spoils of Silicon Valley to become a public servant with the rest of us. She brings a great, fresh, new perspective to everything that we do, and she's going to be really an incredible asset to our community. Before Katie joined the new media team at the White House, she was at Google, where she was a principal in the new business development team, where she was responsible for products such as Open Social, Google Moderator, and other social voting tools. While at Google, Katie also managed several high-profile products, including Google Finance, Google News, and Blog Search. Before Katie joined Google, she was at Yahoo, where she held key positions and helped build the investing program on Yahoo Finance, as well as lead Yahoo Finance's growth internationally. Katie also is, she's not actually a complete stranger to Washington, D.C. Earlier in her career, she worked as a fellow. She had a fellowship at the U.S. Senate Committee on Foreign Relations. She has also been a volunteer in Kenya and taught in Japan. She has an M.A. in International Affairs from Columbia University and a B.A. in Political Science from Rhodes College. So please welcome, join me in welcoming Katie Stanton. Thank you so much, Katie. And, of course, many of you know Bev Godwin. Bev is really the mother of our community. she has been a pioneer and has really led us, right, a big sister. She has led us from the very, very beginning back in, I think, October of 2001 when it was just 12 of us sitting around a little conference room, and look what we've got here today. So big credit goes to Bev for creating this community. She is definitely one of those yes people that we were talking about. One of the things that she's done recently is to spearhead this whole terms of service agreement. So many, many thanks to Bev. She has just done a tremendous amount of work in that area helping us all. So thank you, Bev. She now is on detail to the White House Office of New Media. She's the Director of Online Initiatives and Interagency Development, where she is working on the Terms of Service and many other very exciting initiatives, which, of course, she'll talk a lot about this morning. She is on detail. Her real job or her previous job was a Director of USA.gov and Government Web Best Practices at Office of Citizen Services at GSA. So she is my boss, and we miss her very much. But we know she's doing great work where she is now. And, of course, USA.gov is the official web portal of the U.S. government, so Bev has been a key player in making that website a world-class website and an award-winning website for the entire public. And prior to joining USA.gov, Bev served as deputy director at the National Partnership for Reinventing Government. Some of you may know it as NPR. When she joined NPR when it first began back in 1993, and Bev worked there for 8 years on issues ranging from managing and budgeting for results, improving intergovernmental service delivery, dealing with local governments. She started the first U.S. State and Local Gateway, and many other issues. Bev has a master's in public policy from the University of Michigan and a BA in political science from Columbia University. So Bev and Katie obviously bring a wealth of experience this morning. We're very, very happy to have them join us. So Bev and Katie, welcome.
You folks in the back, there are chairs up here in the front couple rows if you don't want to stand through this whole thing. Come on up. Come on. We're all one big family. Come on up. Have a seat. One second. We just want to tweet that we've arrived on the stage and make sure it works. I don't know if this is good or bad. I've been really distracted in watching people say, I'm excited for the barbecue lunch. I'm really afraid to disappoint. So, great. So thank you for your time. It's really such a delight to be here and to be standing on stage with Bev. I keep joking that Bev is my best friend at work, my BFF at work, and she's really such a, you know, I want to rename her last name Godwin to Godsend, because she has really been tremendous for our team in helping sort through so much of our job in the new media. So we're really grateful for you guys for lending her to us. I also, before I even get to the first slide, I also wanted to reiterate something that Macon said that was really, really important, and I believe this so strongly, that on the White House New Media team, we are not, you know, here to tell you what to do. We are here to learn from you. And you guys have done so many tremendous things, and there's so much for all of us to learn. We are all new to government, and you guys are really these trailblazers. And so we're very grateful to be among you and be part of this community, and we share in a lot of what you are doing. So thank you for doing all these tremendous things that you've done for not just for the government, but for our ultimate users, our citizens. So you guys are this tremendous force. So I just wanted to reiterate that point. So the title of this session is supposed to be on public participation and engagement. So I figured it would be worthwhile to start out with a definition of what exactly this means. So we talked through this, and when I was hired, you know, well, what does citizen participation really mean? And it's really this brand new role in the government and in the White House. So the way that we are looking at this is, you know, as here, you know, the process by how the public can participate and how they can help influence and help engage with the government and with all of the information and all the digital assets and the services that we have. So that's how we're looking at this from a definition perspective. And we thought it'd be helpful to talk a little bit about some of the background. And unfortunately, the way things have been and the way things kind of are, that we have this disengaged citizenship. And at least from a voting perspective, you know, some of the data suggests that citizens do feel a little bit disengaged. I mean, from a voting perspective, roughly 30% of people are not registered to vote. And even in the 2008 presidential election, which was a tremendous turnout, it's still only roughly 61%, 62% of registered voters actually came out. So we have a lot of room still to grow. And And there's some reasons behind that. Part of that has been people don't really understand the process. Some people don't feel that they can make a difference. I mean, even after you vote, then what do you do? You know, is your citizenship over? And there's also the sense of there's not enough communication. It's why the president has really taken a step out, saying and wrote the memorandum on openness and transparency and participatory government, and how important that is to help people feel engaged. How many of you saw the Simpsons episode last fall, where Homer goes to the polls and he's trying to vote, and every time he tries to pick Barack Obama, the John McCain choice shows up, saying like, "Congratulations, you voted for John McCain." Just by a show of hands, we're just curious. Okay, so a good amount. So, you know, while this was a comedy, there are some roots there, roots in the reality where people feel like, how can I make a difference? Or, you know, the polling issue aside, feeling that, you know, their vote doesn't matter. And even worse, when they do vote, that there's nothing really that they can do beyond a civic level, beyond voting. And so we need to change that.
Thanks, Katie. It's so good to be here today. You know, I spoke last year at this conference, and we have come a long way in a year. I remember I was on a panel last year doing Social Media 101, where we were all learning about the tools and talking about would we ever be allowed to do some of this stuff in government. And so we have really come a long way. I just wanted to start with that. But talking as we talk about public participation and engagement, and I know Macon and Vivek also said this, don't separate it from the mission and goals of your agency and the public's top tasks, which is a common theme we talk about in this community. You look at this as how can the public participation engagement help you reach that mission and goals. And some of the benefits of it are that it provides official information. As Vivek said, government information is golden. It's the trusted source. The informed public feels like government's listening and takes ownership. The public can help identify problems and solutions, and the public can help government and one another. And so to go through that, Katie and I decided we should talk about this in three types of public engagement, and we want to give examples of each and the benefits of each. And they're sort of a continuum, but they're also blurred lines. It's not black and white between each one. In many initiatives and things we do, there's pieces of all of these in here. And they're all important. It's not to mean just because it's a continuum, one isn't important. One's tremendously important. But it's really government to people to government, and then people to people. So starting with government to people, this is where our websites are. And where most of us are, and web managers for the most part are in public affairs offices because it's a communications tool. And other things in this space of the government to people are our e-newsletters, our email alerts, our RSS feeds, text messages to young pregnant women on their cell phones. I mean, it's pushing information out. The swine flu web pages by themselves are government to the people. And the president's weekly address that's on whitehouse.gov, we moved from the public just being able to listen to it on the radio that they can now watch it anytime they want on video on whitehouse.gov, but it's still pushing information to the people. But there are huge benefits to the pushing of the information. And one, as we know, it gets the word out. Getting the word out on swine flu right now is extremely important, but it's important in all of our agencies to get the word out. And so it's not just about our websites, it's where are you getting that word out online. For most of us, our jobs have changed from being a web manager to being an online program manager because you're managing space outside your website. And so you're going to where the people are or trying to go where the people are. Another benefit is keeping the public informed and up to date, keeping government transparent by letting the public know what government is doing. Making sure that you get the official U.S. government information out and correcting misinformation. And so sometimes you want to be on Wikipedia and other places and commenting on blogs to correct misinformation. And you're meeting people where they are. If you can't read this cartoon, it's a guy who's fallen off his desk chair and he says, with a computer in front of him, and he says, "I'm okay, just a little too much push technology." So sometimes we need to move beyond just pushing out the information, and people want to be part of the conversation. And that's really what Web 2.0 has been about, is the content, that people want to help you write the content. They want to comment on the content. They want to edit it. They want to vote on it. They want to share it. So moving on to the next one, I'll turn back to Katie.
Okay, we're having some issues. I wanted to start out with a second version about the second type of communication, which is really people to government. And this was the example where we launched Open for Questions on the White House blog, where the president asked citizens, tell me what's on your mind. So I'm going to go ahead and play this. Hopefully the sound will work out.
One of my priorities as president is opening up the White House to the American people so that folks can understand what we're up to and have a chance to participate themselves. I've also held town halls around the country to get perspectives from outside Washington, where people are feeling the brunt of this economic crisis, not as an abstract debate, but as an everyday reality. Many of you are worried and have a lot of questions, and you want to know what your government is doing to get our economy back on track. You deserve those answers. That's why we're going to try something a little different. We're going to take advantage of the Internet to bring all of you to the White House to talk about the economy. Here's the idea. Right now at whitehouse.gov, anyone can submit a question about the economy or vote on other questions. We're going to compile those questions and votes, and then on Thursday, I'll be giving you some answers myself. This is an experiment, but it's also an exciting opportunity for me to look at a computer and get a snapshot of what Americans across the country care about. I'm looking forward to the results. We may not always agree on everything, but this way I can get a sense of your concerns and give you some straight answers. So, America, what do you want to know about the economy? Just go to whitehouse.gov and ask me.
So this was a really cool experiment. Partly because it was one of the first projects that I was able to work on when I arrived. But great, because we had over 90,000 citizens submit questions. I mean, 90,000 within a few days. That was really tremendous. It was the first of its kind. We had over 100,000 questions actually posed and about 1.8 million votes. The president and everybody was just really delighted that we were able to bring out so many questions. But even more importantly, that we were able to make sure, and this is something that I think we'll continue to do and continue to experiment on, how do we make sure that we are responsive and aligned to the needs of our citizens? And this was a really great tool for us to do. Another example with people to government and that you guys have done, the TSA blog, the EPA video contest was really cool, webchat at usa.gov and recovery.gov, the IT dialogue. And the reason why these examples are really important is that it helps reaffirm to our citizens that not only do you matter, but we're really listening and we're making sure that we can be there for you, and we need our citizens engaged. We need our citizens to help us as public servants, making sure that we're doing a good job and that we're responsive to everybody's needs. This visual is just really interesting, and this is representation of all the questions that came in. Unfortunately, it looks like most of the East Coast got cut off here. Sorry about that. but it really, you did ask a lot of questions out here. But every state was represented. And it was really, tremendous that we had such great participation. So the third, which is a lot of what I'm spending time on, or the third type of communication, people to people. And this is new, and this is really, really important too. And so I saw Matt Harmon here from Corporation National Service, and congrats to Matt. Can we give him a big round of applause for what he did with serve.gov? This is just awesome. So launching serve.gov is part of the president's, initiative and push for service. And here's a great platform for people to find ways to serve in their local communities and people to post ways that they need help in their local communities. And this week, we're going to have a town hall in Missouri. And we want to really keep highlighting these activities because they're so important at the national level, but also at the grassroots level. And I also want to give a big shout out to Craig Newmark in the audience too, and Craig's, you know, great essay on Craigslist for service. And there's so much that we can do. And Craigslist is another tremendous example in the private sector of people helping people. I need a mattress. I need a place to rent. And for the record, I need a place to rent. If anyone knows, let me know. I've been using Craigslist, but but these are all examples of how important it is for people to connect with other people. Another example, which is really interesting, that launched a few weeks ago. How many of you here, by show of hands, saw the president's video on Nowruz to the people of Iran? And just a quick raise of hand. So pretty fair amount. So that was a really neat, you know, first of its kind type of video message. The president of the United States wishing the Persian people a happy Nowruz. And what was tremendous there is not only did we push that out, but on Facebook, for example, people would share that with their friends. And when we looked at the data, we saw that there were more views of this video in Tehran than San Francisco. That was really neat. And that's not something the government could really do. We can't really make sure that we get more people in Tehran doing it. And that's not really, you know, as legitimate and authentic. And here you have people sharing to other people, which really is a powerful thing. It helps, you know, allow citizens to take ownership and be engaged, and really goes a long way. And I mean, ideas, you know, and I'm sure many of you have a lot of these great ideas of other, you know, ways we could do this. But as Vivek has talked about, you know, how do we transform government into this platform? That, you know, what if, you know, Homeland Security could do something with Twitter? People could put a hashtag in their zip code, and when they see certain issues fire up, the Homeland Security team can't be there, right? You guys are busy. You have a lot of stuff going on. You have a small amount of people, but leveraging these platforms of where people are could really be tremendous. Or on Social Security, with the Social Security team on Facebook, what if, you know, since, you know, as Martha noted, that you have all these baby boomers now, and it's the fastest growing group actually on Facebook and Twitter, you know, people are like, how do I get these benefits? What do I do? And people say, oh, this is what I've done. And people sharing their best practices to one another. So those are just some of those, some examples I wanted to throw out there. So challenges, I'll leave that to Bev.
Yeah. So, when I came, as Macon said, I came over to the White House Office of New Media about 2 weeks in, and the eight people there had their lists of things they thought I would be able to fix that first day. They had been saving all their government problems. And I'll give you an example, because this audience will really understand. The video director says to me, "What's NARA?" And I said, "Well, that's National Archives and Records Administration." He says, "They're telling me that I have to, for Presidential Records Act, I have to save every video in this format." And he told me the format. He says, "We don't shoot in that format anymore." He says, "So they're telling me I have to copy everything I do into this old format." He said, "It'll double my job." He says, "Can you fix that?" So I said, "Well, I can work on that. Is that your top priority?" He says, "No." And he gives me like 10 other things. So we haven't worked on that one yet. But I knew you guys would understand how hard these things are. When they came in of a group of 80 on the campaign, and now they have 8, and they were used to running a million miles an hour, and they come in and face new rules and challenges that they didn't have that we all know we've been facing. So this group really does feel your pain. It is very hard to do things at the White House. In some ways, it's harder than an agency because there's additional things we have to watch, like the Presidential Records Act. But all of us don't have enough resources. We're never going to have enough resources. The culture in the organization, is it open to some of these, using some of these new tools and thinking of people to people in a way to govern? The legal issues have come up. Privacy and security issues have come up. And the digital divide, I'm not, there is definitely a digital divide between those who have online accesses and then don't. But within this community, and I think I didn't even know Vivek was going to talk about this, there really is a digital divide between the content folks and the IT folks that we need to bridge that gap. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the best practices to overcome the challenges, because all of these challenges can be overcome. And we know that because there are innovative pockets in every agency in the government, and whatever you want to do, somebody has already done it, and they've figured out how to do it. within the statutes, the law, the regulations, the culture, and the resources. And so I put together this list of best practices, and this comes from this community. I mean, this community knows. I think Macon was right on target. We have the answers within our community. But I think if you stay focused on the goals and users, that is our public, you can't go wrong. If you're doing what's right for the public and what and using these new technologies to achieve your mission, you're not going to go wrong. Working together, it's not just content and tech, and I was so glad somebody asked that question in the first session. It's also your lawyers and your security folks and your privacy folks. They're not all in the CIO shop, and you need to bring people together up front to focus on how to get something done, not the barriers. And that's one of the things I think has been one of our biggest changes in the last year is it's not so much if we're going to go there, it's how we're going to get there. Because I'm getting lots of calls now from people saying, my new secretary wants to have a YouTube channel, or my new administrator wants to have a Facebook page, and how do we do it? And so I think the conversation is shifting from if to how, but you need people up front to be part of the solution to help you figure out how to do it. And that has been one of the very exciting things to be on the White House team is when we did open for questions, we sat around with the IT guys and the lawyers till late at night, and nobody said we can't do this or well, this will take a year to do. It was like, okay, here's the issue. How do we solve that? And we worked together to solve the issues. Keeping projects simple. It's not only easier on you, the public will better understand what you're trying to do and better be able to use it. So we talk a lot about lower the barriers to entry. On Open for Questions, we made it very easy for the public to come in and understand what it is that they were to do to ask their question and what would happen with their questions. I know Macon talked about this. Experiment and iterate as we learn together. Start small and start quick. Test the tools. Test the moderation techniques. And it's okay not to have all the answers. Try new things. Risk and failure really are okay. And if you can hear Macon Phillips from the White House say that, that's okay in your agencies too. Share knowledge, experience, and the leverage we have in our community. This community of web managers is very powerful, and we really do have the knowledge among ourselves. And also, we have more leverage outside the government if we are one rather than if we do things agency by agency or bureau by bureau. For example, share knowledge about the free and low-cost tools that are out there. That gets at the resource issue. Leverage the power of all to push the envelope on things like accessibility from the vendor community, making sure that these products are developed to be accessible up front. It's much easier to do that than to retrofit them later. Join forces with each other. Hold conversations with the public around common topics. As Vivek said, the public really doesn't know which level or care which level of government provides a service, and they don't know how government's organized. They don't want to know how government's organized. They shouldn't have to know. So we should look at it from the public standpoint and organize ourselves around it and use technology to cut down the barriers. Point to each other's successes and use WhiteHouse.gov to show what is possible. If people in your agency are saying something can't be done and the president's already done it on WhiteHouse.gov, it's hard to say it can't be done. And I wanted to show one example of the agreements that we're doing on the terms of service with GSA because this really is an example of overcoming barriers by leveraging the power of all of us together and also templatizing the process so that it's almost the same from provider to provider. But about a little less than a year ago, when I was at GSA Office of Citizen Services working on USA.gov, we were wanting to start a YouTube channel, and we contacted YouTube and said, you know, the government wants to start a YouTube channel, but our lawyers are saying that there's all these issues in the terms of service that you check the box when you're an individual going to start a channel. You check those boxes, you don't even read them. But if you're checking them on behalf of your agency and you look in them, the lawyers point out that there's an indemnification clause, a choice of law, a place of law, endorsements, et cetera. And so we started working with YouTube, and EPA was one of the leaders in this. They were trying to do this at the same time. They brought together a meeting of a few agencies with YouTube, and several agencies were saying, well, GSA take a leadership role to develop an agreement. YouTube was begging us to take a leadership role at GSA because they didn't, this is a free service they're giving away. They didn't have the staff or the bandwidth to work agency by agency or bureau by bureau. And so they asked us to step forward. And so we started working with them first and began this process of developing with a few lawyers from different agencies to deal with the issues in the terms of service. And on the left side, you can see the ones that have been completed to date. Some of these are brand new. In fact, there's another one that was agreed to yesterday. Add this can move from the right column to the left. That was just agreed to yesterday, and we just haven't signed it yet, but all the lawyers have agreed. And these, if you're not on the forum website, forum.webcontent.gov, you should join it, and you can find out, you can see these agreements, find out the process that each of the providers uses to get you the agreement. We have tried to push the envelope even further to say, can't we sign once for the whole government? And Vivek Kundra said to me, I'll sign. If the lawyers say I can sign, I'll sign. Well, the lawyers have advised that you can't really sign for the whole government. And so they do have to be signed, and we're working through the department level and then the independent agency level because, again, the providers don't want to sign with every sub-agency, and so we're trying to get these signed at the department level so at HHS, for example, they can sign for all of HHS. We also tried to push the envelope with the provider community and say, can't we have one agreement for all Yahoo products, for all Microsoft products, for all Google products? And they've pushed back and said, no, there really is a different terms of service for each product. And so we're going along. And I show on the right the ones that we're considering. And I say considering because these providers don't have to say yes to these terms of service. But the products on this list came about because GSA wanted to use them, or the Executive Office of the President wanted to use them, or an agency told us they wanted to use them. And when an agency is the one that wants to use them, that agency general counsel is taking the lead in negotiating the agreement. But we're working with these vendors to say we want to share these agreements government-wide so that any agency who has a business need for this product and their lawyers say okay will say okay. And these agreements are to deal with the legal issues in the terms of service. They are not dealing with every problem and every cultural issue of social media. And, you know, people have said, have you dealt with the security issues? Well, the security issues are not in the terms of service. And so it really is one step forward, but it's a big step forward to allow you to use these tools. So I know I went into that in detail because I know there's lots of questions about what's happening with those and where we are. And if you have a tool that you want to use that isn't on the list, talk to your lawyers first to see if they're willing to take the lead to negotiate. We have a model of agreements that have, you know, the 16 issues that are usually in this terms of service that have to be negotiated. I do want to say also that, and this is the example of the power of us all together, because we've been able to negotiate with these providers things we would have not been able to get agency by agency by agency, and things like getting rid of the logo when you use these tools on your sites, getting rid of the persistent cookie when you use these on a .gov or a .mil site. And so the power of the community is shown through that. So I want to open this up to discussion. Katie and I will sit down, and I'll start with answering some of the questions that came in through the tool that Sheila and Rachel sent out. And you guys used the same tool we used for open for questions for that. I'll answer some of those, and we'll answer some we saw on the Twitter feed, and then come up to the mics. We'll take some other ones.
So I like being the one with the questions because I can give Katie ones I don't want to answer. So the top question, can everyone hear me?
Does this work?
Okay. Can you hear now? All right. So the top question was, what does citizen participation mean to you? I think Katie started with that one. The second one is, and these were based on the 92 votes that came in on these questions. How do we get our arms around the records management piece for social media that is housed on .com sites, Flickr, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, etc.? Our policy is being developed on a government-wide level to protect the government and citizens. And this is from Wayne at USDA. So this is a great question, and I think you could ask the same question around accessibility. So there actually is government-wide policy on records management. It comes from NARA, and they address social media, but they really leave it flexible that each agency decides what's a web record. And then within some agencies, it's delegated further that each office decides what's a web record. So I think that different things are happening around the use of putting government information on third-party sites. I think some agencies are saying this is not a record. I think other agencies, and this is probably the biggest category, are not putting anything on those sites that are not already on their official government websites. And in a way, that makes a lot of sense because these are another communication tool to reach a different audience, a larger audience in some cases, but it's another communication tool. And so you might ask, why would you put something out on these sites that you're not putting on your website? So a lot of agencies have dealt with that. We've been dealing with this at the White House through the Presidential Records Act, which we don't have the option of saying it's not a presidential record. Anything we write is a presidential record. If I have sent you an email, it will end up at the Presidential Library someday. Hard to believe, but it's true. So we have not started a Facebook or MySpace or Twitter account at the White House yet, but we will. And as Macon said, just keep watching. And Katie's been working on this. And you know, as I said in the best practices, bring your IT people and your legal people in early and work towards what you want to do. And so we will be doing it, and there probably when we start, it'll be manual, that every message we send, we'll be sending to this email that they'll capture it. But there is technology that will capture things on these sites, and so the IT folks are going to help us with that. So we will be doing it. So just as a way that they're around. Third question, what tools and resources do you use to effectively review and manage the mountain of data gathered from citizen input? Katie?
Yeah. Oops. It really depends on the tool. So, for example, our blog, we have a CMS provider that we inherited, and it's okay, it's good. It'll give us some general analytics, but we are working on a better way to standardize the data, and it would be great. We don't have all the answers, but it would be great if we could maybe form some kind of working group to figure out how can we sprinkle on some, you know, analytics, JavaScript across all of these .gov sites and create a dashboard of information so we can collectively see, and to Vivek's point, that out of the 24,000 websites, you know, where might some consolidation make place? Where are users coming? Where do we see a lot of unique users? So we don't really have a good, at least as far as I know, a good, you know, centralized measurement platform, and we've been doing it piecemeal. So at least, you know, speaking from WhiteHouse.gov, we have one provider. It's okay, not great, but open for suggestions if you guys have any tools that you have been using that are good.
And I just want to add to that in terms of dealing with the mountain of citizen input you're going to get is to, and I had this on my best practices, but I didn't go into detail on it, is use the community to help you moderate. And so on Open for Questions, we had a vote up or down on the questions. And so the more, just like when you were submitting these questions, the more someone voted up, the higher it got to the top. We also allowed the public, and you see this on YouTube and other sites too, to flag things that were inappropriate or off topic. And it was only open for 2 days when we did Open for Questions, and so I think when something's open longer, that works better. Really allow the community to help you with that. These tools now have those features, and you see it on all the social networking sites where people are rating things by 5 stars, or they're voting, or they're thumbs up or thumbs down, and they're flagging as inappropriate. So, you know, we do have a YouTube channel on WhiteHouse.gov. We can't write comments yet because of the Presidential Records Act, but other people can write comments. And we don't moderate it, but we let the community moderate it. So, let me take, I'm seeing getting a 10-minute thing, and I want to give the people standing up a chance. So let me just take one more from the ones that came in, and that's, I'll give this to you, Katie. How do you plan to address the digital divide?
I mean, as we joke, the digital divide, is it, you know, webmasters versus IT or online versus offline? I think we need to be creative. So the digital divide is something real and something that we need to strive towards, and we cannot ignore it. But we need to find better ways of doing that. And that's not necessarily just for the government to solve. It's for the private sector to step up as well, and other nonprofits. One example that Bev had raised, accessing information, government information, while not everyone might have access to an internet, they may have access to a mobile phone. So maybe if we can push out information to people who are interested in subscribing, if I'm a young pregnant woman, I may not have access to the internet or a computer, but I do have a mobile phone, or someone in my family does, and I can get updates about when I need to go in and see my OB. Not sure. Bottom line is that we don't really have all the answers again. Something that we are working towards, and there too, we need a lot of help from within this room and outside of this room.
So I'm trying to follow the Twitter fall, and I see more of you guys saying what we're saying, which is great because it'll allow people who aren't at the conference in person to hear more. So if I'm not seeing a question and you have it, please get up and stand at the mic. Let's take some questions from the floor. If you could say your name and where you're from, that'd be great.
My name's Steve Hagan. I'm with the City of Richmond. And my question goes to the point of the power behind the numbers. You guys had the entire government negotiating these terms. Has there been a good example of the cities being able, or states being getting together to, or have they just piggybacked off of the same terms of service that you are already using?
Yeah, so that's a good question. The providers, first of all, we're negotiating the terms of service so they meet federal law. So it's different than some of the state laws. And so they really are federal terms of service that address the things in federal law that these terms of service violate. The providers, we've asked every single provider, will you open this up to state and local government? All of them have said no so far. Because they can't imagine how to do it. They don't have a GSA that will kind of centralize it for them. And so this is particularly hard at the local level. On the state level, and you state folks should talk to NASCIO, National Association of State CIOs, or whatever other, I don't know if it's National Conference of State Legislators. I'm not sure where it is, but would somebody step up and take that role where they're negotiating for the states? I don't even know if that's possible because every state law may be different, but there's probably enough commonality that there could be a template. On local government, I don't know if it's U.S. Conference of Mayors or International City Managers Association or what, but having someone help step up to work with the providers would help each of the cities.
My name is Cy Kidd from Patent and Trademark Office, and the question that you put out on the whitehouse.gov open questions, if you got 90,000 responses, I know that the answer is coming back, let the community help you, but that's not going to be sufficient to handle that volume of questions or even a tenth of that. Especially in such a short time frame, what sort of resources did you have to apply in order to get those questions vetted and answered so that people would feel that their question was actually being addressed?
Yeah, so the platform we use was built off of Google Moderator. And so by working with a third party who already had built this tool, that was built to scale. So it was built to allow anybody to submit a question, anybody to vote on them. And the beauty of it was that we really did little work, that we watched it. We were prepared, and we were watching very diligently to make sure that there weren't, hateful questions in there, for example, or people just, not having good table manners. And it was really wonderful to watch the community step up, and they very correctly would flag something as inappropriate. And once it was inappropriate and enough members of the community voted on that, then it was taken out of the rotation. The government and no one in the White House touched those questions, and it was really community driven. So we couldn't possibly, out of the 1.8 million votes, we couldn't possibly, the citizens didn't bring us to our jobs to kind of, delete questions that were bad. They brought us in there to help, get information out. And so that was a beautiful part, at least in my opinion, of citizen participation. So
You know, I think working with technology partners who have already built these programs and products, and using part or using these technologies that are built to scale, and then having really good policies about, you know, what's inappropriate, what's appropriate, really work out well. I hope that, does that help address your question? Make sure, okay. Yeah, so again, built on Google Moderator. So it's a public product, a free API, and you can go to, I think it's moderator.appspot.com to learn more.
Yeah, and Katie's exactly right. I just want to add to that that the technology allows you to screen some questions automatically by putting in certain words that would not allow the question to come through, and so you can, certain vulgarity words, and I know at the White House, Sasha and Malia were not fair game, and so if they had those words in it, they didn't come through. And so, you know, whatever it means in your agency of things. So you can use some of the technology as well. But in terms of scaling to meet it, we had three people looking at the questions coming in, and they were volunteers that we borrowed from the White House volunteer program, and they just sat around a little tiny table that we sat up with three laptops and just loved watching this, and you'd hear them talking about it. They were in the office with us, and but they really never removed any questions. But I think also planning up front, what is the purpose of doing this, and what are you going to use the questions for? In this case, the purpose was for the American people to ask questions that were on their mind about the economy and be able to hear from the president for what the government is doing to address those needs. Now, even so, he was only able to answer a few of the top questions from the online. These questions were submitted both through text and through video. And so some of them were asked by video during this online town hall. It was streamed on whitehouse.gov, and then he took some questions from people in the audience. But it was still a small fraction of them. But other people in the administration have used that database of questions to answer some additional questions since we had the online town hall. But really thinking up front, what is the value of what are you doing this for, and what are you going to do with the information is key. I do want to say something that I found very interesting about the text versus the video questions. Out of the almost 100,000 questions we got, less than 1% were submitted by video. But when you watched the video ones, they were so compelling because you made a connection with the individual and realized this is a real person in Ohio or in Alabama or wherever they said they were from. And one of the questions that the president chose to answer during the online town hall was a video of three students at Kent State University in Ohio asking about college tuition. And to me, there was such a connection. And so, you know, as we were doing the lessons learned from Open for Questions, how do you lower the barrier to submitting video? Is it because people don't have video cameras, or they don't know how to upload a video, or we didn't give them enough time? Or should we try sometime only taking video submissions but allowing everyone to vote on them? And so we don't have the answers to that. This is all new and emerging technology, but I found that very interesting.
And I just want to reinforce that point that that Bev made, that we did not remove one question. That is really tremendous. And it was because of the technology and the citizen participation that freed us from having to cross that line.
Lee.
Hi, I'm Lee Mockenstern from the National Institute of Justice. And this is about the terms of service. And I'll say hypothetically, because the media's here. If you work in an agency that had a lot of lawyers in it, and you were pretty sure that they weren't, or they were leaning towards not signing these terms of service, or were not adopting them very quickly, what advice could you have for small agencies within these larger cabinet agencies that we would love to see them do that? We have much more interest in pursuing these social media things at our level than the cabinet level does. What advice would you give us for how to work with them, through this? And, find out what the real issues are, and when we find out what the issues are, make sure, the few lawyers that we do have are talking to the people at GSA so we can, take advantage of all the work you guys have already done.
Yeah, so you remember that slide we put up, We Feel Your Pain? So, without naming names of departments, there's only one department that's in the category you're talking about. So my advice normally to agencies, and this has happened a lot, is to have your lawyers talk to the GSA lawyers. And Mike Etner has been absolutely fabulous from the Office of General Counsel and GSA. He has spent hours on the phone, lawyer by lawyer, by agency, because as someone said, and I think in the questioning in the first session, there's different interpretations of the same laws. and people want to feel comfortable. And so he's been great. I know he's already talked to some of the lawyers at Department of Justice at length. But I think sometimes there's a disconnect between the leadership of an agency and other people in the agency. And so, you know, I don't know what the head of your agency wants to do, but if he wants to do it, the lawyers will start talking to GSA more, I'm sure. Max.
Hi, Bev. Hi, Katie. Max Kakis from Federal News Radio. I was at the Federal Consortium for Virtual Worlds Conference last Friday, and one nice lady who works for an agency that I won't rat out here said that her bosses had to put the kibosh on their Second Life experiment. They were actually going to try to dip their toe in the water on Second Life. And her IT folks and her bosses sort of said, well, we have to sort of back away from this right now because of security concerns, very real security concerns that have to do with IT, especially CIOs, not being very comfortable with the number of ports that Second Life asks both desktops and also networks to open up in order to make it functional. And I'm kind of wondering what your thoughts were about Second Life. I know, Bev, that you've had some discussions at GSA about Second Life. How does that fit into your thinking now for citizens' participation? It's still a very new technology, and it's not huge yet, but it's getting huge.
Yeah, so I would take it away from Second Life and just say virtual worlds in general. And I did not go to the conference this year, but I went last year to the Federal Consortium on Virtual Worlds, and I was blown away at how much is already happening around the government in virtual worlds. And I know the Centers for Disease Control has been a leader in the kids' virtual world space. And, you know, for those of you who have young kids, know they're in Webkinz and Club Penguin, and I don't even know all the names, and those have many more people in it than Second Life. Second Life is still a fairly niche market. And so I guess, I mean, I'm not a security person, but I would have that, whatever that agency is, go talk to the agencies that are doing it. Their security people had to feel comfortable. There's got to be a way that you can protect those ports from data slipping out or hackers coming in. And so this is happening, and DOD is doing it in a big way. They're in virtual worlds for training exercises. As I said, CDC, NASA is, NOAA. And so have the security people from that agency talk to the ones who have figured out a way.
And actually, a quick takeaway, the lady from the National Defense University who was running the conference said that there are a group of people from various agencies who are now working on the sidelines trying to develop a secure version of virtual worlds for use by agencies that would meet the security guidelines of the CIO Council.
That's good to hear. That's Paulette Robinson at National Defense University, and she's fabulous. And so I think the security officers from the agencies, and it's not just in virtual worlds. Some of us, GSA, we have employees have access to all the social networking sites. Suzanne Narutz stood up and said that Energy just opened YouTube and Facebook. Other agencies, Interior, others are still blocked. And so these security officers need to be talking to each other on why it's secure in one agency and not in another.
I would only make one other point too, which is really pick your battles, and also try to be as data driven as possible, and look to where most of our citizens are and where they make sense. And so, if you know most of them, if the 56 million of them are Americans are on Facebook, I might just kind of choose that one and a couple of the other bigger ones, especially because Second Life does still seem to me to be a bit niche.
Right. It goes back to the business case and the mission. So, I was ignoring Rachel and Sheila's sign, so they stood up. So there's only two more people to ask. So if you could ask your questions quickly, we'll take both of them.
I specialize in talking fast. I'm Ann Peritsky. I work at NIH in web analytics. And I wanted a little more information about what you were talking about, Katie, about sort of measuring and trying to, across the government, figure out where are people, which ones of those, however many you said, 24,000 websites might not have enough traction to stay put. And, of course, I want to know about persistent cookies.
Hi, Micha Sifri, Personal Democracy Forum, speaking of cookies. My question is based on the Open for Questions experience. What lessons learned do you have about the fact that so many questions were about legalizing marijuana? Some version of that, which 40% of Americans apparently support, but it wasn't taken seriously. And so what should we learn from that episode?
Did you want to wrap up? Great question on analytics. I think it's a longer conversation, but bottom line, that there are different tools that you can easily add onto your website to make sure that you can track visitors, engagement.
That part I know. Okay. The part I need to know is about the support for it, which we don't really have where I work, and, you know, sort of what's happening at your level and how do you anticipate it filtering down where we are.
Sure.
We can't use persistent cookies. That sort of doesn't help us.
Yeah, no, and so I basically print then both of those to Vivek's team because he is really driving that and look at this very holistically in terms of how this really affects not just the White House team but all of you. So that's a longer conversation with Vivek. On the other question, open for questions, lots of great learnings. I think I actually would disagree with all due respect that the president did not take this seriously. He did. He did answer the question. And I think, what happened there is that, it happens in Washington as a newcomer, and as many of you already know, that, there are a lot of special interests, and those guys were really, organized, and they, made a lot of votes. So, lesson there is that how do we make sure that any special interest doesn't take over and that the questions that do rise to the top are really the most representative. What's probably on most people's minds today are, their health and swine flu and getting a job and their economy and their savings and how they're going to educate their children. And we want to make sure that any product that we do is that allows citizens to participate and ask questions is really going to be truly representative of all Americans.